Susan. Did you get a pass card for her? Right here, Susan replied, lifting up a card and shaking it in the air. Stellan moved to the desk, took it from Susan, handed it to Six, and let her go long enough for her to tuck it in her clutch. When she was done, Stellan claimed her back immediately, but Six looked to Susan, who spoke. See you tomorrow, babe. Totally cool to meet you. Right back at you, Six replied, earning a huge smile from Susan. She returned one not as huge, but definitely genuine, as Stellan moved them into the hall. You know, this is actually kind of cruel to do to your hungry-for-your-boss's-business staff, she noted under her breath as they moved along. I find I have absolutely no response to that, he replied, pulling her closer so she looked up at him, to find him gazing down at her as they walked. I don't get into their lives. They really have no place getting into mine. You're rich, gorgeous, and wear a suit way too well. When you're that, it happens. He smiled down at her. No, seriously, have you ever seen David Gandy in a suit? She asked. I don't even know who David Gandy is. Google him. I don't Google. She stared up at him. Who doesn't Google? She asked. I have so far found no need to Google. But if I did, I have staff to do it, he answered, then suggested. I could ask Susan to Google him. I wouldn't do that, unless you wanted to lose her for the rest of the day. His brows went up. That attractive? She mentioned Harry, didn't say much. I could still tell she was devoted. But regardless, she'd drop him like a rock if Gandy crooked his finger at her. And you? Stellan Lang just ate her out on his knees at the side of his desk, then fucked her on it. David Gandy was, well, David Gandy. But Stellan was Stellan. I think I'm good. He threw his beautiful head back and shouted with laughter. She watched him do it, not having any idea how gentle her face was and how openly blissful she looked doing it. She did notice they were in the reception area, but only because he stopped her by the elevators and tagged a button. Call me about dinner, he murmured, pulling her around to his front and trapping her in both his arms. She lifted her hands and placed them on his pecs. Will do. He bent and touched his mouth to hers, then twisted his neck to touch his mouth to her jaw, before he went even further and brushed his lips at the skin behind her ear. She pressed closer as she shivered in his arms. He lifted his head and looked into her eyes. Can I share how elated I am that you decided to drop by? I've been noticing you seem to like me, she muttered. I'm glad you're noticing, he murmured in return. Suddenly, it all came back, all of it, hitting her like she'd been hurled bodily at a wall. Stellan, his face came right into hers, and he whispered, Don't fuck it up. Please. God, Simone, this has been one of those rare slices of perfection in life. Let us both have it, honey, without fucking it up. She closed her mouth and nodded. He took in her nod, got closer, touched his lips to hers again, and when he lifted his head, the elevator binged. He moved her to it, scooted her in, and stood outside as she stood inside, looking up into his dark blue eyes. Later at dinner, darling, he bid. Right, baby, she murmured. The door closed him off from sight, but the entire time they slid shut, he did not move. She stared at them, thinking she was supposed to remember something, but she couldn't quite wait. I've chosen a woman to spend my life with. He'd said that. He'd said, spend my life with. Oh, God, she whispered to the doors. He was lost, too. Stellan was in love with her. And that was all Six could think about as she made her way out of his building, down the street and into the parking area of the building that housed her own office. Which meant she didn't think, not once that day, that she was down to 2 weeks and 4 days. And hours later, after she tiptoed into their room, quietly got ready for bed, and slid in beside him only for him immediately to pull her into his arms, then roll to his back, with her mostly draped on his front, while she whispered, "I'm home safe, baby," to which he replied drowsily but with a squeeze of his arms, "Good." And then they promptly both fell asleep. She still would not consider the fact that she didn't think it at all. 16. Right to the sun. Stellan. The next evening, Stellan was in the kitchen, his light rock Pandora channel coming through the speakers built in around the house, his hands engaged in preparing the salad they'd have with dinner that night, when he heard the garage door go up. This was followed, surprisingly, shortly after, by a cacophony of sound that could only be a hurrying woman entering a home. He didn't look to his watch to know that Susan, Harry, and Crosby were due to arrive in 15 minutes. What Simone didn't know was that, when it didn't have to do with work after Crosby was born, Susan was routinely at least 10 minutes late, usually more to the tune of 20. So he was prepared for them not to be on time. He probably should have shared that. "Oh, God, shit, fuck," Simone exclaimed the minute she rounded into the kitchen, dashing straight to him on gold no-heel sandals, wearing dark gray harem pants and a butter-yellow suede top that fell off one of her shoulders, making that street chic look haute couture. "I'm late, so late. I'd hope to be home in time to help, but you would not believe," she declared directly prior to practically accosting him in order to press a hard kiss on his jaw. She did not tell him what he would not believe. She also didn't give him a chance to say anything, for instance, to ask what she thought she could do to help, considering she had no interest in the goings-on of a kitchen, including when drinks were being mixed. Except the end result of all of that. "I need to freshen up real quick. Gah!" she cried, moving swiftly away from him, finishing, "Be back as fast as I can." With that, she threw her purse and laptop bag to the table at the foot of the stairs and raced up them. Stellan stood still in his kitchen and stared at the stairs long after she disappeared. Something had happened the day before. Something had broken in 6. He knew this because Simone was shining through. Everywhere. They'd had dinner the night before on a break from whatever it was she did to do what she did for Joel. And they'd had breakfast that morning with Em. In other words, they had not shared a lot of time together since she'd come to his office the day before. And still, he knew. It was that blatant. It was that beautiful. The woman who just arrived in his home had just come home. She'd come home to him. He smiled down at the baby spinach leaves in the bowl, just as his cell rang. He looked to where it was sitting on the counter, suspecting it would be Susan unnecessarily sharing they would be late. It was not. He frowned. It was his mother. He did not ever want to take a call from his mother, particularly not then. But it was of an hour in the evening that if he did not pick up, she would simply call again, and again, and again, one right after the other. He had little hope of making it quick, even if he had an excuse to do so. But if he turned off his ringer, he might miss a call from Susan, and dealing with his mother's petulance that he didn't pick up was worse than dealing with her rambling when she was nearing the end of bottle number 1 of the night. He sighed, wiped his hands on a dish towel, and picked up the phone, taking the call. "Mother?"
"My son,"
she replied, and it was not slurred, a good sign. I have, he started to share his excuse, that he could not talk long, moving away from the island toward the windows to stop and stand, looking out at his pool with its light flowing through different colors, the waters rippling from the water feature. I'm coming down, spending the weekend starting tomorrow, she cut him off to announce. Stellan stood still and stared at the pool, feeling a surge of fury rush through him, the kind he had not felt in years. She did not ask how he was. She did not ask after his health. She did not ask if maybe he'd met someone he enjoyed spending time with. She did not ask if he might have plans this weekend and perhaps could not entertain his mother. She called about her, not to talk to him. I have some shopping to do, and the symphony is doing Stravinsky. She carried on. I thought I'd make it a long weekend, visit some friends, go home on Tuesday. Can you see to Susan getting tickets for us and have Margarita put fresh sheets on my bed in my room? He kept his voice carefully modulated when he replied, You can't come down this weekend. I'm sorry, she asked. You can't come down this weekend, he repeated. This was met with silence. Actually, he continued, you can't come down at all, Mother. Not for the foreseeable future.
I? For goodness sakes, why?
She asked, not hiding her shock. Because this isn't your home, to call and announce you're coming down, and you want my housekeeper to make your bed, he answered.
You're my son. I'm your mother, she returned, and I haven't seen you in weeks.
I no longer live alone, he shared abruptly. A woman who means a great deal to me has moved in. At an appropriate time, we'll come up to Sedona, pick you out to dinner so you can meet her and start to get to know her. However, until she's comfortable with you, you cannot come down and stay with us.
You've moved a woman into your home? She queried. Quiet, wary, and sidling toward Wounded.
Yes.
One I haven't met?
Yes.
Have you been hiding her from me?
Of course not, he sighed.
Then why have I not met her yet?
He didn't answer that, and not simply because it was none of her business. He said, I can't get into this now. We're having company for dinner. And they're arriving soon. I'll call you when I have time, and we'll talk about when Simone and I can come up and have dinner with you.
This is... Stellan, this is outrageous, she declared.
I'm not certain how it's outrageous, Mother, he replied.
You're not certain? She demanded. You're living with a woman who hasn't met your mother.
I'm hardly of an age where I need my mother's approval of the women I see. He returned.
You're always at an age when you should respect your mother, she fired back.
And it was then Stellan was done. Done with the kind of people in the world who thought they could produce children and then leave them entirely to their own devices as they attempt to learn to become functional human beings. Done with dealing with family members you had to endure rather than enjoy. His mother had once been a good mother, loving and nurturing. Life had then surprised her simply by sharing the knowledge she'd chosen the wrong man to love, to make a family with. And for decades, she'd been entirely unable to cope. And there was no nurture, no support, no tuition. Instead, she had railed and scorned and exhibited every selfish, self-involved behavior you should not teach a child. She had not lived a life devoid of love or access to anyone in it that could give that to her. She had not witnessed her only anchor in the world being gunned down right before her eyes, directly after he'd moved to protect her. She had been relatively wealthy and privileged before she met his father. And after him, she had not been forced to learn a trade or fend for herself. And it occurred to Stellan, right then, that she was one of those women who simply could not function without a man to take care of her, and she had decided precisely how she should be taken care of. Therefore, when Brigitta Lang lost her husband, and she was saddled with two children after being spurned by a powerful, rich, well-known man, and of an age where it was easy to convince herself that her prospects were few, and certainly none of them had the promise of an Andreas Lang, she'd given up. She had been in her late 30s, had decided she was washed up, and had set a course for her life to make that so. And simply because Stellan was bored of her nonsense and entirely unmotivated to deal with the fallout, should he make the effort to exit her life, he'd unwittingly enabled her dysfunction by negligently supporting it. He was done with that as well. He also didn't hesitate to share he was. And can you explain how it's respect to call your son the day prior to your arrival, to share you'll be coming to spend time in his home, not to mention tell him to bother his assistant and housekeeper to see to your wishes, also without any notice? He queried.
Aye,
it's not, he answered for her. It's not only disrespect, Mother, it's rude. It always has been. I had no reason to share this with you before because your selfishness would only affect me, and I'd had decades to become used to it. Now, should I allow it to continue, it would affect Simone, and I'm afraid that's unacceptable. So I'm telling you, it will no longer continue. His mother spoke in his ear, but he didn't hear her, because he felt an arm slide around his waist and a warm body press against his side. Simone was there, looking up at him, her pretty face beautiful with gentle concern. That wasn't Simone breaking, cracking open, letting him in. That was just Simone. He wound his arm around her and shook his head to share he was all right, and she had no need for concern. The expression did not shift, nor did the position of her body.
Are you listening to me, Stellan? His mother's shrill voice sounded in his ear.
He pulled Simone closer and looked back out the windows. Simone just joined me, so no. Actually, I wasn't.
I was saying I have plans with friends. Lunch set with Jenna.
Then stay with Jenna.
I can't stay with Jenna, she snapped. At this late date, it would be rude to ask.
Did she even listen to herself? I know precisely what you mean, he stated.
Stellan?
You're not coming here this weekend, Mother. If M is here, should you arrive, I'll instruct her not to let you in.
So this is why you never gave me a key, so you could shut me out when you needed to, she bit.
No, I never gave you a key because this isn't your home. It's mine. I don't need a family member with access to take care of pets or handle mail while I'm away. I also am of an age. I don't need my mother sauntering in when I'm having dinner guests or I'm entertaining a woman. It would seem perfectly obvious to me, considering your penchant to do whatever the hell you want whenever the hell you want to do it, that my not giving you a key was tacit communication that I desire my privacy. However, since that was not made implicit, I'll make it explicit. You are not welcome here, unless you're invited here. Is that clear? There was a long, heavy moment of quiet before Brigitta Lang, not getting her way, unsurprisingly lifted her foot and stepped well over the line.
I cannot believe you, my only child after I lost Celie, that you treat me.
Automatically, Stellan turned into Simone, took his arm from around her, lifted his hand and curled it tight around the side of her neck, while he bent so he saw nothing but her liquid, warm brown eyes. Do not even consider bringing Celie into this conversation, he growled. He felt Simone's hands curled deep into the sides of his waist, as she rolled up on her toes and pressed her forehead to his.
I only have you left, Stellan,
his mother returned sharply.
You're right. You do. But I'll point out something I should have shared a long time ago. The simple fact that you just said that you lost Seely, when we both lost Seely, tells me precisely how little you're aware of the fact that your son has feelings, emotions, and now a life that you know nothing of because you never made the effort to know of it. And because I reached this age with a mother who is more interested in making certain she doesn't run out of wine than understanding her son has made decisions in his life that mean he no longer will be living it alone, I myself feel no need to make the effort to share. Case in point, you haven't told me you're happy for me, Mother. This is because I'm wondering how long she'll last, she sniped.
Because I'm unworthy of earning a good woman's love?
He asked, and Simone's fingers dug into his flesh. There was a moment's hesitation before.
I'm not going to be a party to this conversation anymore.
Answer the question,
Stellan clipped.
I'm hanging up now, she declared.
Don't bother phoning to set up dinner with that woman who lives with you. I'm suddenly feeling the need to get away. Perhaps Coronado or Napa. I don't know when I'll return.
Stellan held Simone's gaze and her neck, even as he lifted his head slightly away.
I'm sure you'll choose Napa.
Perhaps it's beautiful there.
And offers an endless supply of your only reason for breathing,
he pointed out.
Simone's eyes got big, and she held on to his waist as she pressed her front to his.
That's unspeakably insulting,
his mother snapped.
It's also what has so far been unspeakably true. Though now, I'm speaking of it.
Why am I not surprised? She asked acidly. This cruelty? I knew you had your father in you, and here it is, finally coming out. Just like him, hidden under the dutiful sun, until you have something else you want. And then you throw away what you already have. I hope this woman in your life knows how temporary she undoubtedly is.
And there it is, coming out even when you're mostly sober. Now, you can't deny it, Mother, and I won't either. I found someone I want to risk it all with. And instead of being happy, if concerned for me, as a mother should be, it's somehow about you. Simone has nothing to do with you. But the truly unfortunate part is, through your own actions making it so, I have nothing to do with you either. And just to make it clear, the unfortunate part about that is, that's been the case for decades. You just didn't realize it until now. But I always did.
I have endured.
You have endured what thousands of women have endured. And you did it with your health and your beauty intact, and a wildly generous settlement. Most of the rest don't have that. They still carry on and make no excuses because they don't have a choice. With what you have and what you squandered, you especially have none.
I think we're done here, she bit out.
Since the last time I saw you, when you were well into bottle number 3, you have not been dishonest with me. In other words, agreed. We are very much done here.
He knew she didn't disconnect, waiting for him to think on his words and back out of them. So he disconnected.
Baby,
Simone whispered immediately, pressing close.
I'm fine,
Stellan said curtly.
No way you're fine, she replied gently. That sounded ugly and intense.
Then it sounded what it was.
What happened? She asked.
She decided to come down for the weekend. I decided that I'd rather she not.
And you told her about me.
And I told her about you.
And she wasn't a big fan of that.
You didn't factor. That isn't how Brigetta Lang works. The fact she could not come down for the weekend factored, and it degenerated from there. She just used you as an excuse.
You got into the drinking? She said hesitantly.
Yes, I did.
And she lashed back with,
"This whole thing, proving that I'm like my father."
It was in that precise moment Stellan's world changed. Like it did when he climaxed with her, it wiped clean, and there was nothing. Nothing but her. But when his climaxes would fade, the world would come back as it was and always had been. This time, it did not. This time there was a different kind of climax. And when it was done, he knew nothing would be the same. It started with Simone stating,
"You have got to be kidding me."
"Simone, I told you," that she would say things like,
she pulled free from him by taking a huge step away, but leaning immediately back toward him and screaming,
"You have got to be kidding me."
Stellan went still in the face of her fury. It was a mistake. She moved like a flash, tearing his phone out of his hand. Unfortunately, he was still engaged, so she did not have to enter his password. Therefore, she was open to going to his recent calls, which was something she did.
"Darling," he murmured, moving toward her. But she shifted away and did it quickly. Not to escape him, to begin pacing.
"No," she snapped into the phone she'd put to her ear. "It isn't Stellan calling to apologize. This is Simone. And I just witnessed that happy mother and son convo, Ms. Lang. And it turned my goddamned stomach."
"Hey, what?"
came from the side, and Stellan's gaze went there to see Susan had let herself in, as usual. She most definitely had a key. And there she was, Crosby in her arms, Harry coming up the rear, dragging the copious equipment they deemed they needed for whenever they came with son in tow. Susan and Harry got the vibe and immediately stopped, Susan getting pale, Harry's eyes going big. Crosby did not get the vibe, reached his arms toward Stellan, and shouted,
"Stellan!"
Torn with which way to go, Stellan went with the only real choice he had, shaking his head at Susan as he walked to her and then catching her son, who launched himself at Stellan when he got close.
"No," Simone bit off, "I'm not listening to your wine-addled nonsense. We're going to get a few things clear. Woman in Stellan's life to woman in Stellan's life. We'll start with the fact that you do not ever mention his sister to him again, and we'll move on to you not ever even coming close to accusing him of being like his father."
"Holy Moses," Susan breathed, her eyes now also big. Then they narrowed.
Uh-oh.
Harry, having caught his wife's narrowed eyes, muttered,
"Stellan!"
Crosby screamed again, and latched onto Stellan's ear. Susan burst forward, slapping a bouquet of flowers she'd brought down on the dining room table, as she made a beeline toward Simone.
Harry moved to Stellan and asked, "Is it too early to pull out the scotch?"
"You know where it is,"
Stellan answered, turning his attention to Crosby, who was still tugging on his ear. He then stole his nose, and Crosby dissolved into giggles as he made a grab to get it back.
"No worries," Simone snapped. "Rest assured, it will be quite some time before Stellan and I meet you in Sedona. Enjoy Napa. I'm sure the local economy will appreciate your visit."
To that, she took the phone from her ear, stabbed it with her finger, and turned enraged eyes to Stellan.
"Mark these words, handsome. I do not ever want to meet that woman in my life. And more, she doesn't want to meet me, or I'll scratch her goddamned eyes out."
She clipped, blinked, looked at Crosby, shot straight, then muttered,
"Sorry, that would be gall-darned."
"What happened?"
Susan near on screeched. Crosby heard his mother's tone and started fretting. Stellan put his nose back, then took it again and regained Crosby's attention. Simone tore her eyes off Stellan holding Crosby and looked at Susan like she was unaware of her arrival.
"Stellan and his mother had words," she explained,
I got that part, Susan returned. And she said some unpleasant things, Simone went on. Susan pivoted to Stellan.
I never liked that woman, she snapped.
Stellan looked to Susan's husband.
Harry, you were getting scotch. On it, brother,
Harry muttered on the move.
And get sick some wine while you're at it, Susan ordered.
Simone drinks gin as a pre-dinner cocktail,
Stellan shared.
I may never drink wine again,
Simone declared dramatically, making Stellan beat back laughter.
Maybe I'll have gin, too, Susan decreed.
Shit.
Harry, now at Stellan's wet bar in the family room area, muttered.
How about you?
Stellan asked Crosby.
What are you feeling like having to drink tonight?
Juice!
Crosby shouted.
Water,
Susan said. Crosby turned his attention to his mother.
Juice!
Water, baby, she said softly.
Crosby glared at her for a moment before he turned and stole Stellan's nose. Stellan smiled at him. And he did it hiding the fact that he no longer needed anything more from Simone Marchesa. Not her deepest mysteries, not access to her sketch pads, not anything. He had all he needed. Because Simone and Six had become one with his phone to her ear and his mother on the line. The sensitive soul and the superhero both had stepped out of the shadows. And he was in love with her. He was going to make a family with her. And he was not ever going to let her go. So that's your boy and your man, yes? Simone said to Susan. Harry Six, Six Harry, Susan introduced perfunctorily, coming toward Stellan.
Hey, Six, cool to meet you,
Harry called across the room with a bottle of scotch in his hand.
You too, Simone replied with a smile aimed his way. And this, Susan stated, pulling Crosby out of Stellan's hold, causing a mad screech she completely ignored.
She then walked right to Simone and plopped him in arms Simone had to quickly move to catch him with.
This is Crosby, center of the universe.
Crosby stared at Simone. Holding herself and the child awkwardly, she stared back. After a while, she slowly looked to Susan.
I'm not, well, I don't have a lot of experience with kids.
I didn't either, Susan returned. Then I popped him out and, boom, instant expert in all things Crosby. Simone looked startled. It happened as easy as that?
No, that's a total lie. I was a mess.
I read about 5,000 baby books before he showed. I still didn't know anything. But you know, in the beginning, they cry, you feed them, change them, or try to get them to sleep. You figure out which cry means which. He figures out which buttons to push to get what he wants. It's a give and take. I give, he takes. And we both love every bit of it. Simone looked back to Crosby. Crosby studied her, then twisted, reached out to Stellan and cried,
Stellan!
He likes his goddaddy,
Susan muttered. Stellan came forward and relieved Simone of the child. Crosby instantly went for his nose. Stellan avoided him, but bent in for a blow on the neck from his lips. When he pulled away, Crosby yelled,
Mo!
Stellan gave it to him.
And this is why he loves his goddaddy,
Harry stated, handing Stellan a glass of scotch.
One mo, and Uncle Stellan doesn't hesitate.
Stellan took it, noting,
You're early.
We were on time, Susan returned.
Yes, you're early.
Susan rolled her eyes.
What can I get you to drink, Six?
Harry asked, making himself at home back at the drinks cabinet.
I'll make hers, Stellan said. Suze?
Harry called. My choices are nothing alcoholic, and nothing alcoholic. So who cares, honey? Just give me something wet, Susan answered, coming to stand close to Stellan and her son.
She's pregnant, Harry explained to Simone.
Wow, congrats, Simone said to Susan with another smile. I cried 3 times before getting in the car to come over here, just thinking about hearing Stellan call you darling again. In other words, like the last one, it's gonna be a rough ride.
Crying? Simone asked.
Crying all the time, and my nipples were hard and hurt like heck for 7 months straight, and I actually broke a window when I threw a jar of jelly through it that I couldn't open, and that was in 5. It went downhill from there. Good Lord, Simone muttered, no longer smiling even a little bit.
Susan shrugged and shoved her face in Crosby's.
Crosby patted her cheek.
Worth every minute, Susan whispered.
Simone looked to Stellan, caught his eyes on her, and looked away.
He grinned into his scotch before he took a sip, handed Crosby to his mother, and headed back to the abandoned salad.
Honey, will you get out Stellan's scotch and 6's chocolates? Susan asked her husband.
And when you do, hide those chocolates. You remember 3 with Crosby.
Harry smiled to himself as he pulled a bottle of scotch out of a diaper bag.
Yeah, I'm remembering 3 pretty clearly.
Stellan was about to open a can of mandarin oranges when he caught Simone standing still, but with her head tipped well back. He took her in and realized she was looking at the speaker in the ceiling. Then she dropped her chin and looked right into his eyes. And the open longing exposed in hers again shifted his entire world. That's when he heard Loggins and Messina's version of Danny's song. Stellan felt his gut drop, his throat get tight, and that perfect moment grew exquisitely more perfect when Susan started singing with the song while swaying and dancing around with Crosby in her arms, with the addition that he saw Simone felt exactly the same about the moment. His mother disappeared. His father disappeared. His sister disappeared. Her mother disappeared. Her father disappeared. Her uncle disappeared. Stellan was going to give Simone Marchesa his name. He was going to make a family with her. But right then, already, they had a family, where there once was none. And they both knew it. He called softly. I forgot your drink, darling. She moved slowly to him and replied in the same tone. I'll live. Where are the vases? I'll put those flowers in water. I've no earthly clue, he admitted. She smiled a smile at him that was the first he'd ever gotten from a 6 who was openly Simone. It was the brightest, most beautiful thing he'd seen in his life. Like flying right to the sun. Holy Moses, what are you going to do? Susan asked. It was after dinner. They were still sitting at the dining room table. Susan had a drooping Crosby in her arms, giving him his bottle. And Stellan had just learned what Simone had told him earlier he would not believe, but never shared what that was. Simone shrugged. Nothing much I can do. It isn't like a lot of our clients aren't schmucks, she answered Susan's question.
That's gotta suck, Harry noted.
Simone gave her attention to Harry. Usually the other guy's a schmuck too, so it doesn't. But this time, all I'm getting from the guy we're suing is that he's a decent person. It was our guy who siphoned off the top, regularly blew everything they made, from what was in petty cash to expensing his fantasy football draw party in Vegas, and made deals with his buds the business couldn't support, Simone explained.
And you broke into the good guy's house and saw all his notes on this? Harry asked.
Simone grinned at him. Not officially.
Officially, we have no idea that our opponent has kept profuse notes throughout their deteriorating personal and professional relationship. Notes that are of significant detriment to the case. But unofficially, his lawyer is poring over every word I took pictures of, in hopes of coming up with good answers for all this stuff when it's introduced in court.
Is he gonna come up with good answers?
Harry queried, and Simone's grin turned into a smile. Nope. But all the time he's spending on it is billable hours, so it's a win for the firm either way. But it'll eventually be a loss for the client in two ways. And his appearing, he deserves that double whammy. Harry chuckled. If this guy is such a jerk and did such jerky things, why would he sue his ex-business partner? Susan asked. Simone lifted her drink from the table, answering before taking a sip. The sun rises and a variety of jerks rise with it. Who knows why they do what they do? In this case, the only thing that's important is prompt payment of bills. Susan looked shocked. Your attorney won't advise him to drop the suit? Simone put her drink down. Our attorney spent 2 hours this afternoon trying to convince him his case is weak at best, and he should reconsider this course of action. He refused and accused the firm of not preparing appropriately to efficiently put forth his suit. I think at this point, no one will be too cut up to mark one in the loss column. People, Susan muttered. I don't get them. You and me both, sister, Simone muttered back. They shared a small smile. Stellan looked from them to Harry, and then the men shared a small smile. Should I break out those chocolates you brought? Simone offered. Susan groaned.
Totally,
Harry answered. Simone shot Harry a huge smile. Where did you hide them?
Pantry. Behind the olives. And just to say, you guys got a lot of olives.
We both drink martinis, Stellan muttered.
That explains it,
Harry muttered in return. Simone got up and Stellan lounged back in his chair that was across the table from Harry and Susan, not at the head so no one was odd man out in seating, turned his head to watch her move to the pantry. He felt something and looked to Susan. His gut didn't drop at witnessing her look. It warmed.
Just in case, you know,
Harry started quietly, gaining Stellan's attention.
You didn't get it from the drama we walked in on and the night being a good one. We approve.
Stellan inclined his head. We better be seriously in the black this year, boss man, because I'm totally going 5 carats for that girl. Susan shared.
You have an unlimited budget, Stellan told her.
She beamed. The beam died and she asked, You okay about your mother?
Absolutely,
he answered, turning his head as he sensed Simone coming back. He caught her eyes, gave her a soft look, and then he again gave Susan his attention.
The only thing troubling me is the fact that I realized I should have done it a long time ago. Preach that, my man. So maybe my woman will officially break ties with that ass we pay she calls a father,
Harry put in. Stellan's attention riveted on Susan.
Oh, boy,
Simone muttered at his side, flipping open the box of chocolates on the table.
You're speaking to him again?
Stellan asked. I had to tell him he was going to be a grandfather again, Susan answered.
Considering all the love and devotion he's given Crosby, and obviously you, but of course,
Stellan drawled sarcastically.
That's it, bro. Tell it like it is,
Harry said.
Shut up, Harry,
Susan hissed.
No way, baby,
Harry returned. He's my father, Susan reminded her husband.
I'm a father, Harry retorted. So I know what a father is, babe. And that man is no father.
Damn right, Stellan agreed. Susan's narrowed eyes came to him. You can pipe down, too. Stellan opened his mouth, but got nothing out.
Leave her be. He looked to his side and watched Simone pop a chocolate in her mouth.
Darling, you don't know the story, he pointed out.
Nope, I don't, she agreed after swallowing. What I do know is her telling her dad about the baby is not for her dad. It's for her. She's a good person doing the right thing.
The right thing sometimes is not easy, but it's still right. And the goal is for her to be able to rest her head on her pillow and sleep at night, because she did right even to a man who has done her wrong. So stand down, big brother. She's got the real kind of love, so she can deal with him and be all right.
Before Stellan could kiss her terribly inappropriately in front of Susan and Harry, Susan spoke.
I am so seeing how having another being with female parts in our little family is going to work for me. Which means I so hope this new one is a girl, so she can totally even out the numbers.
Susan smiled at Simone. And check it, baby girl shopping, and then toddler girl shopping, and then little girl shopping, followed by teenage girl shopping. I mean, decades of that goodness. I'm going to be drowning in princess dresses until she gets married.
If it's a girl, I'm throwing it back, Harry declared.
That was when Stellan chuckled. He heard Simone's soft laughter, and Susan looked in pain because, with a now sleeping Crosby in her arms, she couldn't punch her husband. Stellan stretched an arm along Simone's shoulders and pulled her to his side. She didn't resist. She rested into him and reached for another chocolate.
Shove those closer to me, Six, Susan ordered. Simone complied, and Susan reached for one, telling Harry, I'm totally ballooning up with this one and doing it with forethought.
Baby, I don't care if I have to cut a new door for you to get through. Just deliver me a healthy kid with you the same, and it's all good.
Simone melted closer to Stellan's side as Susan's peak vanished. They enjoyed more easy conversation, but with a sleeping baby who needed his bed, it didn't last long. However, this time, when Stellan stood on his front walk after saying his goodbyes, and while watching Susan and Harry load up and drive away, Simone stood in the curve of his arm at his side. After the brake lights dimmed when Harry pulled out onto the road, Stellan guided Simone into the house. He closed the door. He locked it. Then he pulled her in front of him and pushed her back into it, moving in close to her front, his hands coming to her jaw, bending his neck so his face was close to hers.
Well, hello there,
she murmured, her brown eyes warm and dancing.
Susan hates my father, and has little time for my mother. Most likely that will be even less now. Margarita hates my mother and doesn't even mention my father. But neither of them has confronted her. Perhaps they feel it isn't their place, perhaps there's been no opportunity to do so. You could have felt both those things, but you didn't. You just did it. And thus there has been no one in my entire life, even Celie when she was alive, who stood up for me against either of my parents when they were treating me like shit. Except you.
She stared up at him, looking shocked, then panicked, then angry.
No one?
She asked.
You can't imagine, and I cannot describe, how beautiful it was to watch you get that angry and protective on my behalf, sweetheart.
The panic was edging back. He touched his mouth to hers to stop her from talking, moved away and whispered,
Don't pollute that either, Simone. If you fight me on everything we have, until you finally bow fully to your feelings for me, I don't care. But don't pollute that. It was too beautiful, and I need it to be exactly that for the rest of my days.
She held her body tense and held his gaze. So he watched as thoughts and feelings chased themselves through her eyes. He could not read all of them and didn't try. He stayed silent, and gave her time. Finally, she came to where she needed to be and gave him what that was. I need you to fuck me now, Stellan, and do it hard.
That will not be difficult to oblige, he replied.
Then oblige, she ordered.
He quirked his brows. Here at the door, or on the floor, or can you make it to our bed? Your choice.
He smiled. Her eyes dropped to his mouth to watch. And that decided it.
He fucked her against the door.
17. Two halves made whole. 6. Saturday night, Six sat in her Cayenne with her Nikon binoculars to her eyes, watching through a window the not-so-riveting show of a broken man sitting alone in his living room, watching the Investigation Discovery Channel. She'd searched his house. She'd searched his car. She'd again run his finances, his credit, his cell records, criminal records, civil records. She'd even done a Social Security trace, run a driver's history, and hacked into the electronic employee records of two past employers. And she'd followed him now for days. But the plaintiff in the case her firm was working had a job in the garden department at Lowe's and was barely scraping by due to the loss of pretty much everything, considering his best friend fucked him over so badly. He'd had to sell his house and move into a one-bedroom condo. His girlfriend had even dumped him. He certainly wasn't sitting on a mountain of money he'd scavenged from the company. In fact, the equipment they both owned that needed selling now that the company was dissolved but was in limbo due to the lawsuit would go a long way for the guy. Most specifically, paying his legal bills, which were eating him alive. Yeah, some of their clients were schmucks. And that was being nice. She set aside her binoculars, started up her car, drove two blocks, hooked a right, and drove two more blocks before she pulled over, grabbed her phone, and texted Topher, the attorney on the case. I'm closing this down. There's nothing else to get on this guy. If you have any ideas, I'm game to check them out. But I'm clearing out for tonight. Good luck with this one. She hit send, eased her baby back on the road, and picked up her phone to read the return text, sitting at a stoplight. Gotcha. At least I'm not going to be blindsided in the courtroom. Thanks again. She tossed her phone back to the seat, and when the light turned green, headed home to Stellan. The good news was, though she had some investigative work to do for another case, that wasn't pressing, and would be mostly computer work, so she could start it on Monday. This meant she and Stellan would have all day Sunday to do whatever it was Stellan wanted to do, and Six was looking forward to it. She was just there, in the zone. Not in the zone in their sex lives, though she was there, too, totally. But their lives. And for now, she told herself to do what Stellan asked her to do. Not question it, not pollute it, not fuck it up. Just let it be. Strangely, getting back to her life as it had been, with her work being a large part of it, the only change being going back to Stellan's house with Stellan in it at night, it became just what she did, who she was, a way of life. It made being with Stellan easier. No, that wasn't it. It made being with Stellan just life. More important, it made Stellan happy. She had two more weeks of making him happy, and then a call coming in stopped her thoughts and set her to glancing at her dash. It told her Joker Man was calling. Carlo. She hit the button on her steering wheel to take the call. Yo, asshole, she answered.
In the immortal words of David Cassidy, I think I love you. And I'm always reminded of that, especially when you call me asshole.
She grinned at the windshield. "To what do I owe the honor of you remembering I exist?" she asked. "You know a place called the Bolt?" Her attention to the conversation increased. The Bolt was another sex club in Phoenix. Not nearly as nice as the Honey, but it didn't suck. She'd heard it used to be a lot worse, got new management, was cleaned up, and slightly classed up. She'd trolled the Bolt only after that had occurred, and since she'd started at the Honey, it was definitely a step down, and that was a steep step. But it wasn't a pit. "Yes," she answered. "Why?"
"Well, got a friend who's a friend of a friend of a friend, who part owns the joint. And my friend knows what I do for shits and giggles. This guy who part owns the place has got two other partners. One is solid, real solid, good guy, and from what I can tell from what I've been told, it's him that keeps the place running. The friend of a friend of a friend of my friend is a flake, but not so flaky. He isn't worried the last partner isn't up to some fucked up shit, and using the club to facilitate it."
When he said no more, Six prompted. "And?"
"And the good guy partner isn't a big fan of the bad guy partner, and the man in the middle wants to keep things as copacetic as he can. So he doesn't want to go to the good guy partner unless he's got something concrete to show him. I'm not a stranger to Phoenix, so my friend contacted me to see if I'd poke around. But I'm nowhere near there right now, without any plans to get there, so..."
"Enter me," she said.
"Yeah, if you can take it on. He doesn't have your usual deposit because, from what I can tell, he spends all his extra cash on weed, X, various hallucinogens, and sex toys. But my friend says he might be a flake. He's also a decent guy. And he'd be good for your normal fee on a payment plan basis. And if you find something, the good guy partner is gonna have to be brought in. And he'll undoubtedly cover you through the club."
If this was coming from anyone but Carlo, she'd hang up on him. But it was coming from Carlo, and she was facing a slowdown from firm work. On top of that, firm work was never very exciting. So having something juicy to sink her teeth into worked in a big way. "What's the fucked up shit the bad guy partner is using the club to facilitate?" Six asked.
"Prostitution."
"Oh, shit." "On club premises?" she inquired.
"Yeah," Carlo told her. "Books their private rooms in the club. His girls work them, mostly giving, not getting."
"So they're subs," Six surmised.
"Nope. They're paid whores who this guy keeps jacked up on meth or smack and pimps out. This doesn't appear to be entirely voluntary, or say, voluntary at all, if you factor out them being slaves to their addiction. An addiction is considered this guy enables, so he can get them to work for him."
Oh, man. Now she was getting pissed. "Does the paid play get extreme?" she queried.
"No clue about that life. But the words blood play, burn play, and branding were said during my brief. I'm taking a wild stab, but I think that would mean a yes."
"It would mean a yes," she muttered.
"You up for a meet with this guy?"
"Can't do anything until Monday, but yes."
"Great. I'll set it up. His name is Josh, last name Coates, if you want to dig into him in the meantime."
Oh, she'd be digging into him all right. The problem was, she was in the scene, knew the scene, and was known in the scene. She couldn't go undercover to set herself up to maybe be taken in by this BDSM pimp. But Sylvie could. She grinned at the windshield again. "Keep in touch," she said to Carlo.
"Will do. Another news. Things good?"
They were fantastic. "I haven't handed anyone their ass in months, so I'm getting jittery," she told him. "Other than that, they're what they are." Which would be fantastic.
"Love a girl who loves to bust asses," Carlo replied.
That bus with all the squares on it is rolling out, David. Time to grab your microphone, puka shells, feather your hair, and head out.
You think your smart ass is a turnoff? But I'm totally hard right now.
I'm pretty sure masturbation is not allowed.